This is Jason Q. Citizen and Friends on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome to the Jason Q. Citizen and Friends program. It's Friday evening here in Australia as we move into another weekend, another day closer to the end game. And what will that end game be? One thing's for sure, we're not going to give up. And every day we breathe is another day that we learn something new and another day that our team builds up and becomes a force to be reckoned with. Sometimes you wake up and you have a tough time of it and you wonder what's going to happen next. And other times you meet and you rub shoulders with and you learn something from a place that you just don't expect. And earlier in the week, I was delighted to be presented with some information from a fellow called Cesar Bellal from the Gold Coast. And he blew my mind. And accordingly, I read it out in the show. I'm going to read it again in tonight's show to introduce him because he's going to be on very, very soon. And we're going to talk about weather engineering, geoengineering, and we're going to be able to compare notes. And we're going to listen to someone who's been researching this for longer than most of us have, if at all. And for me, it's one of the hardest subjects to understand because whilst I know weather engineering is real, I just don't get it. I don't understand the motives behind it. I don't understand if climate change is real from the point of view if it's hot or cold or dry or wet. And if I can't work it out, I can bet many other people are struggling just the same. And I reckon every politician in the world is entirely bluffed by the whole thing. So whilst I don't necessarily put Cesar on the map here to say that he's going to have all the answers, but what he is going to be able to do is to have a discussion and be able to point out to us what he's learning, where he's getting his information from, his data, his analysis, and working out what really is the agenda so that we can compare what we know and what we see and be able to work ahead in new areas because the citizens are where the truth will be found because we're the only ones that are not vested into anyone telling us what to do, why to do it, who's paying us. We're just here to look out for our planet, look out for our families, look out for our country, and have the best possible life that we can do in the limited time that we have on Mother Earth. So when Cesar's story, this post, and there are many posts on his Facebook page, and for those that are interested, I'll have him explain how to contact him later on. But it's really impressive when you look up in the sky and you see these strange weather patterns, these strange clouds forming, these pathways of what looked like the old sky riders, and all of a sudden now they're everywhere with these aeroplanes dropping lines and lines and lines of white dust, it seems, in the sky. What is it? What's it for? Are they heating the planet up? Are they blocking out the sun? Are they spraying us with chemicals? And why are they doing it? What's it all about? We've heard about Bill Gates talk about blocking out the sun for climate change to try and attempt to lower the temperature of the planet. And then we hear with all the toing and froing of cutting down our coal mines and cutting them out that Mark Latham reports today that according to Matt Keane, the New South Wales Treasurer, we might be able to reduce the temperature by 0.0005 degrees or less in about 30 years' time if we decide to completely get rid of coal in our country. So have these people lost their minds, or is this all part of a bigger agenda? And is that agenda so that we're all confused and we don't know what's going on, and therefore we simply trust authority because authority is the only one that we're allowed to trust and the only one we're allowed to believe in? This is the strange world that we are today when people walk away from divinity and believe only in government. So I'll read this post. I'm so impressed with it. Why is it so cold, and what does endothermic reaction have anything to do with this? An endothermic reaction is basically a process of energy absorption that leaves the surrounding air cool. An instant ice pack is a basic example where the chemical inside absorbs the heat energy in the liquid once mixed, resulting in ice. Typically, ammonium nitrate is a known substance used to create an endothermic reaction, or in other words, absorb the surrounding heat energy where there is available moisture and thus cool the surrounding air. 3 years ago, Caesar took it upon himself to have a snow sample from Mount Macedon, Victoria, lab tested. The elevation was around 950 metres with no industrial activity and very little traffic. Lo and behold, ammonia nitrate was present, along with the typically expected fallout from all the atmospheric spraying that is joyfully denied by many. Well said. Bear in mind that I just caught the tail end of the precipitated snow event. Imagine what the result would have been if I had tested the initial precipitation. So what is happening on the east coast of Australia? The air feels unnaturally cold, many headaches and migraines. I know that my blood pressure drops during these engineered events. We have plenty of available moisture for the process of chemical ice nucleation to bring the temperature down on a grand scale. Is this what is happening? So why would they bring the temperatures down? To influence the political climate on climate-related policies, perhaps? The masses in a lulled state, unaware of the collapse and the meltdown that is unfolding. Maybe it's to keep the many buying into the global warming is a hoax narrative. To polarize the populations on one more subject, to collapse crops during blossoming seasons, to induce the process of dormancy in the ecology when it is not occurring naturally. There are so many agendas and we can speculate all we like, but the fact that this whole process is extremely toxic, unavoidable, and further facilitates the death of the whole planet is very real. We are literally fighting for our lives. Investigate. Caesar is going to be here in a moment, and we're going to talk about that. And hopefully, we're all going to learn if we need to and we want to investigate where to start, how to do it, and how to make sense of the data. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to TNT Radio.
Government couldn't stop a flu-like virus.
And now they want you to believe they can stop the Earth's climate from changing?
The voice of reason is TNT Radio.
Welcome to the show, Jason Q Citizen and friends. If you'd like to reach out, jasonqcitizen@gmail.com. But right now we are going to meet Caesar. Welcome to the show, Caesar.
Hello, Jason. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, look, it's terrific. And I tell you what, you've opened my mind up, and I don't know how much more I can take, but when I learn something new, I just want to get both hands on it, eyes on it, reading, learning, understanding. And what a great way to be able to share your knowledge with a global audience today. It's a great treat to have you here, and welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
What are we learning about the weather at the moment? Is it unseasonably cold right now? Is that what you're noticing? Because it feels like it. It's very, very quick start to winter, certainly in New South Wales. And I realise that even up there in Queensland, it has been a little bit colder than normal. Are we reading it right?
Yeah, well, the entry to winter was rather cold. I mean, it was frosty, just on cue to report and, create the headlines. But as I expected, the temperatures started to bounce back up. We're back in T-shirts. I'm seeing people in singlets and shorts again. You know, your typical kind of a Queensland winter is now back to how it was. So, what makes an impact are those headlines, and these really cold, chilling weather conditions are required for those headlines. And really, that's what sticks in people's heads. You know, time passes, summer comes. How did winter pass, for example? And what sticks with them are those headlines, those cold events, because they really know how to sensationalize those events, and the headlines make, really bright, glaring headlines and, keep that notion sticking in people's heads, so to speak.
So we did get a cold start and now it's back to normal. And I agree with you. Today we're out there in my backyard doing plenty of work around the place. And I noticed that I was taking the tracksuit jacket off, which has been on for the last 2 weeks. The wind has been blowing a gale. We couldn't get painting done most days. And today it felt like it was almost springtime again. So is this a process that they've been manipulating the weather, or has it just been something that's coincidental?
Largely, it's manipulation, and I only go off what I can confirm with my observations, sometime testing, sometime my cross-reference information, and, if I'm sure of it, I will publish it. But in this case, we could see that there were induced pressure systems, and they tend to act like car pulleys. And the polar jet stream, which is somewhat like a car belt, is steered in a northward direction. And we receive the actual polar air mass, which is usually contained in the Antarctic region or in the Northern Hemisphere in the Arctic region, delivered to given regions that are selected to create those headlines. Now, alternatively, sometimes if the moisture is available, and I think in this instance, this is what happened, they can chemically nucleate by spraying certain agents such as ammonium nitrate. There's other chemicals too. We can discuss that a little bit later. To absorb the heat energy and create those cool downs, which tend to feel unnatural. It's a very penetrating kind of cold. I mean, as I'd mentioned in my post, my blood pressure seems to drop in a very weird way. A lot of people start to get respiratory and headaches, migraines, those sort of symptoms. So that's what I believe is going on at the moment. And, you know, I believe we'll have more of these events throughout the season.
Wow, so it's not like they've just done it to drop the temperature and then let it get back to normal. This is a constant attack on the climate that's done artificially to serve a certain purpose or agenda.
Yes. Well, what we've got to understand is the climate system and climate engineering itself is very, very complex. I mean, it's very, very hard to understand exactly what's going on, right? They can have many, many different agendas that we can only speculate on. We can know some of them through our process of testing and verifying, but a lot of them we can only speculate on as to the agendas because of the complexity of the matter.
So how do you work out? I mean, this is the probably the second half of the show, but it's important to set it up for people who are tuning in and saying, wow, there's somebody on who knows what they're talking about in terms of weather. How do you determine what an agenda would be, who would be responsible for it, if it's military-based, if it's government-based, if it's coming from some sort of global organization and it drips fed down into local areas? Is everyone a part of it? Is it some sort of desperation? How does it all come together?
Well, I think the dominators have one goal, really. It boils down to one goal, and that's just to maintain their stranglehold on power and control. That's what it boils down to. And if an unraveling climatic situation is, you know, breaking that grip off that proverbial lever, they will do everything they can to maintain that grip. And, if weather conditions are going to render their system non-functionable, you know, without function, then, you know, they will have their motives, they'll have their reasons to induce these kind of weather conditions. And that's when I try to makes sense with patterns. I mean, you know, for example, you look out for dates, you look out for season entries, and here they go again with the same sort of behavior and patterns and reporting, news reports, sensationalization. I keep an eye out on the satellite imagery just about every night to try and recognize some patterns in the atmosphere to my best ability. It's not easy. It's very, very hard. And if I'm not sure, like I said, I won't publish. And could see it basically when they induce those pressure systems and you see the weather system starting to move up, or, you know, whatever the agenda might be, different things occur. And we have the results following.
So the hardest thing is, of course, is trying to work out who could be pulling the strings. And that's why people just say, oh, it's all too hard, and they give up on it. But very clearly, you can see what's natural and what's not natural. And that would be the starting point, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You can see. But when it comes to who is pulling the strings, ultimately, It is the people that print the money, the fiat money. It's them. They print it, and then the rest is just a chain of command on many different levels. It's a chain of hierarchy.
Yep, that's not something that we would disagree with at all. How then did you get into, I guess, it's two things. It's one, how did you get into understanding the weather is the first part, and how were you able to draw that bow to realize that it's all part of a bigger picture? There's two competing, well, not necessarily competing, but there's two different ideas there, but they've arrived at the same point for you. So take us back a little bit on how you got into this understanding of the weather.
Well, some 10 years ago, I was researching military aircraft, the ones that are still classified. And I'd come across some information stating that one of these particular aircraft leave trails in the skies. And I had my eyes up in the atmosphere to see if I could locate these trails to see if this classified aircraft has been moving around in our airspace. This was in Melbourne. And I started to see these trails, and I started to see a lot of them. I thought, surely this classified aircraft can't be flying around that often. I never see this aircraft. And, I mean, a lot of it is a blur, but somehow from there I became aware of the geoengineering subject and started to research and come across Dan Wigginton's site, geoengineeringwatch.org, and started to research thoroughly. And the information was just, it was comprehensive. There was a lot there to absorb. Took me about a year and a half, two years. Then I started to get a clearer picture on what's going on and what real propaganda is going on and what, is really unfolding on this planet. Because I think on both sides of the fence, there is a lot of deception and a lot of us have been duped to believe a lot of lies. But somewhere in the middle, there's a balanced view and there's a lot of information that's coming out that will back that up. And a lot of consistencies, a lot of news reports that will back that up. And that's pretty much how I came to understand what is happening.
It's so fascinating. So whilst we're going to get into the weather, we've got the rest of the program to talk about it. The idea that you're looking at classified military aircraft and hoping to spot one even in Australia is fascinating on its own. And I'm wondering if it's because of a different pathway you're on before, or were you just asking a whole lot of questions about things that were missing that didn't make sense? For me, I think that the whole exopolitics, the politics of off-planet, was fascinating enough, and that obviously incorporated, ET. Now they call them UAPs, but they were UFOs back in the day. The Roswell incident that was open, and there were so many questions that were not answered that I was fascinated by this whole approach. And I believe the aircraft that you might be talking about, was it TRB? Was that what they called it?
Yeah.
So this was this secret triangular aircraft that was in some sort of black project that still we don't know about, but we've kind of getting a few glimpses these days. And so It may have been some sort of technology that was not necessarily considered entirely Earth-based, that they could do different things with these crafts. Was this where it started for you? Was it this fascination?
It was. I mean, it was that. But again, jumping onto geoengineering, it's a whole different path. You know what I mean? I mean, I started to realize the severity of the situation, what it meant, in terms of consequences that these programs are ongoing on a global scale. And we pretty much jumped ship and really wanted to focus on what's priority to me.
And that's where it becomes fascinating. I think this is the lesson for most people who are listening or will listen to this as a podcast in the future, will realize that they have been noticing that they've got an interest in certain areas, and then it translates into something else and they become quite serious about it and it becomes very real in the moment. And that's why that the for you, Caesar, it's become the weather where you've become your own expert and you've been able to link up with Dane Wigginton and through the geoengineering.org website, which is fantastic. And that's the idea of what we're trying to paint the picture here, because a lot of what I talk about on my show is politics in the moment, and not necessarily just politics, but we talk about survival, the freedom movement, how we might move forward when we're being pushed out by the system, whether it be vaccine mandates that get people to be excluded from society. The only people now that get excluded from society are those that don't want to take a compulsory medicine or a trial. It makes no sense. And so therefore all of us are coming from different parts of our own lives and converging at this point. And it seems to be that the only way we're going to get out of it is to get to the truth of the matter. And what is the truth? Where do we go in all of that? And I find it quite frightening that every day we push and we push and we push and we still can't seem to wake other people up. And yet the weather has got to be the most obvious thing that everyone pays attention to, And it's the one thing in small talk. We're going to go to a break in a moment, Caesar. But, you know, when you go to a party or you go somewhere and you've got to make small talk and you've got to talk about the weather, oh, it's warm today, it's cold today, whatever, I would love to see how you would take on that conversation when you talk about the weather. But these days, the more places that I go, especially in the election campaign, everyone's pointing up and going, look what they see up in the sky there. Is that what it's like?
Depends on the realm, I guess. Sometimes yes, sometimes most of the time no. I mean, people are just too divulged into their leisurely activities and their luxuries and entertainment, just the trivial stuff. You know, you get your rolling eyes and your blank stares usually when you bring up the subject, but it's just not something that most people can comprehend. But I understand the non-comprehension bit, but the unwillingness to even entertain the thought, you know, it's just, it's mind-boggling. It absolutely is.
Yeah, look, it certainly is. Look, well, there's so much I want to talk about after the break. A couple of things that I wanted to bring up so that our audience will know where we're going. We want to talk a little bit what happened in Lismore in New South Wales a few weeks back. We want to talk about possibly your thoughts on what happened in Kansas with all these dead cattle. And again, in Yellowstone National Park this week has been another disaster. And I'm assuming that you've got some, we can go there as well and have a bit more of a chat about what's happening, not just in this country, but around the world. In the meantime, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. You're on TNT Radio.
Rick Munn on TNT Radio.
Declassified files reveal the British interest in Falkland Islands oil. Well, 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 we all know there was a war down there some time ago. Of course, Maggie sent the troops in to protect those poor people of the Falklands. Did she hell? I'm sensing she was threatened that they might lose some oil reserves in and around the island. What do I know? I'm just an old cynic who believes politicians are out first and foremost to line their pockets and protect their own interests rather than the interests of a half a dozen islanders living somewhere off the coast of South America. But that's the old cynic in me. I'm an old cynical Irishman. Why? Because I've lived and grown up in the United Kingdom / Ireland for the last 48 years. And let me tell you, there's none more disgusting breed of politician.
Rick Munn is locked and loaded on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
The United States government has declared you an enemy of the state. For the first time in history, a foreign journalist has been charged under the U.S. Espionage Act for publishing truthful information about war crimes. If convicted, our right to free press is over. We have been led to despise the journalist charged by a massive smear campaign directed at both the left and the right, yet his record speaks for itself.
He's the only journalist to have never gotten it wrong.
The charges are opposed by all major human rights and free press organizations, but our once trusted news outlets have failed to inform us. It is not too late. We can demand the UK stop the extradition of journalist and publisher Julian Assange. We can demand the Department of Justice drop the charges. Call UK Home Secretary Priti Patel at 020-7219-3528 or call the Department of Justice at 202-514-2000. They are not after him. They're after us.
You have the right to know. The right to know about culture. The right to know about the economy. The right to know about technology and to know about sports. You have the right to know about education and politics and the weather. You have the right to know what's happening abroad and in your backyard. But above all else, you have the right to know that this right is under attack, and we must work to protect it. Because in order to be free, we must be informed. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
This is where you get your daily ration of high-velocity conversation. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Jason Q, Citizen and Friends. We are discussing all things weather, and we have a superstar in the making. His name is Caesar. He comes from the Gold Coast, and we're about to get into the meat and potatoes end of what it is that we can understand about weather engineering. Is it real? Is it not? How do they do it? Can they make it hot? Can they make it cold? Can they make it rain? If so, why so? Caesar, can you make it rain, and can you make it not rain?
Absolutely. The rainmaking is more a part of localized weather modification programs. This is something that's officially acknowledged, and there's a lot of information on it. I mean, let's not confuse this with global scale climate engineering. Two different things. Weather is one thing. It's a localized thing. You know, your patterns, your weather patterns and whatnot. climate is a regional climatic system. It's completely different. And that's what I'm talking about, climate engineering specifically. So we've got to be careful there, because a lot of these disinformation sources, they associate climate engineering with weather modification. And, you know, people will often share those Cessna planes with the flares on their wings. You know, this is acknowledged. It's official. It's a known thing. Very two different things. Very, very, very different two things. Yes, they can make rain if they want to. They can flood. And Project Popeye was one example during the Vietnam War to flood out the plains where the guerrilla warfare was existing, ongoing. The droughts largely caused by the climate engineering operations. A lot of the particulates that are dispersed in the atmosphere, they load the atmosphere with too many what's called cloud condensation nuclei, or let's just call it dust particles, where if there is available moisture, or vapor moisture, they cling onto each particle, not forming heavy enough to fall as a raindrop, and thus it migrates. And that's sometimes when we see those featureless cloud canopies, those depressing cloud canopies where there's no wind, no rain, just nothing. And it can last for days. And I know in Melbourne, it would go on for days, 8 months of the year, actually, to be exact. And this is ultimately what the stated goal of their proposals are, to achieve this for the sake of bringing down temperatures. But what it is doing in actuality is creating short-term cool downs with an overall warming effect by trapping heat and destroying the ozone layer, which allows more thermal energy to come in and, you know, cause more damage. So, yes, they can cause droughts, they can flood plains, they can do all sorts of things.
So they go out there intending to cool the planet, so they've got the right intention because they believe we need to cool it, but the unintended consequence is that it's heating up anyway due to these pockets of temperature here. Is that right?
Not quite. I mean, they know what they're doing. I mean, the people that are operating the systems aren't asking questions, the order followers, so to speak. No, they think they're doing something benevolent, and that's why they're involved in these programs. But the people at the very top know what they're doing. It's ultimately, you know, it boils down to the power and control. They want to manipulate the weather to get rid of those undesired weather conditions that would disrupt commerce, that would disrupt industrial civilization. Because we've seen with the floods that we've had here what it can do to their whole system. The grid goes down. There's no power. There's no police force. There's no policing. They lose control. And then it's the law of the jungle that ensues. They don't want that. If they want to create havoc, they want to choose where it is and how it is, whether it's a collapse of crop or, you know, for weather warfare purposes to destabilize a country, as they've done over the last 20, 30 years in the Middle East for various agendas. They can do this, absolutely.
Wow. So someone at the top, whoever it is, running the show, and this is what probably happened with COVID, the same thing. You've got an agenda somewhere way, way up, and you've got everyone else falling in line and believing everything that they're told. But this weather thing is something else. You can make people think that they're cooling the earth, which satisfies what they're doing. So everyone thinks they're doing the right thing by it all. They go out and sell a story to the planet that we've got to get rid of the fossil fuels to make our own contribution. We'll tax the hell out of it in forms of carbon tax or something else, whatever we can possibly do. And in Queensland, I hear that they're now talking about a sun tax. If you have solar panels on your roof, when they don't need your power, they're going to tax you if you need to send it back to the grid. And so there's always a cover story so that the agenda is always set for whichever thing that they want to sell to us. So is the agenda depopulation? Is there something else it could be other than that?
You can't discount depopulation. It's definitely on the books. I mean, that's very apparent, and there's a lot of information that you can verify that with. You know, once you acknowledge the state of the planet and the biosphere, the part of the planet which sustains life, when you acknowledge the state that it's in freefall collapse at the moment, and this way of life, this industrial life, is not sustainable with this kind of population, then you can clearly see, and add the fact that most of these oligarchs are on their platforms, you know, boasting on about how we need to depopulate. It is ultimately because the planet is dwindling in resources and its ability to provide. And these dominators, these oligarchs, don't want to share the remaining resources if there will be anything left for the future. So depopulation is definitely on their agenda.
Wow. So it's as simple as that, that they simply believe that they own the planet one way or another. They're in control of it. They're in charge of it. And the rest of us are literally useless eaters that are taking up too many of their resources. So here we arrive at this. This is not something that's come up in the last 5 years or 10 years. This is a long, long approach, right?
It is a long approach, very long approach. They would have calculated this into the equation. They would have seen this. I mean, technology has gone exponential. It's allowed for populations to grow to exponential rates, which demands more technological goods, which demands resources, which demands the gutting of the planet's resources, deforestation, pulling out minerals that should stay underground that have toxic properties, paving the planet, polluting the oceans, microplastics everywhere, everywhere you could think of, in fetuses, in every fish, in the most remote places. I mean, it's endless, you name it.
So we've done it to ourselves, but we've done it because they've planned for it anyway, one way or another, and we're literally destroying the planet.
We are literally destroying the planet. We are. We've done it to ourselves. Every one of us have to blame, but this system that was created by the dominators has pulled us away from natural living, you know, the philosophy of natural living and living in accordance with nature, which I believe large sectors of humanity once were living like that. But, we've become accustomed to and are part of this toxic industrial way of living, and we're all played our part in some way. And now we're going to, see the consequences of that. We are already. We have been.
So when you're looking at this from your own perspective, obviously you're very concerned about what you're seeing, and you've become somewhat an expert now in understanding the weather, and you volunteer that there's still more that you want to learn and don't know and still have to understand. But how do you motivate yourself to say, I need to have a big role to play here, I need to walk my way out of this for the sake of my family, if for nothing else? How do you motivate yourself every day to continually go on and compete and still live a normal life?
Well, let's backtrack a little bit. I don't see myself as an expert. I mean, I just, spent a lot more time researching and observing. It's just an accumulation of information that I have in my head on my computer and USB, and I relate back to it quite often to refresh my knowledge bases. But what gives me the motivation is the realization that, this planet is sacred. It's absolutely sacred. This experience of life is sacred. And looking into your children's eyes and seeing that pure innocence, when you observe nature and you see the birds just hopping from one tree to another, or any other wildlife, really. I mean, what gives the human race the right to take away that experience from any sacred existence, really? What does? And we've got to ask ourselves a question. What purpose are we serving here? Do we come here, consume, trash the planet and leave? What kind of a life is that? I mean, we can take the view of, do I live a life of usurpation and consumption, or do I serve a life of giving? And that's what it comes down to. I want to live a life of giving, and I want to serve the whole. I want to serve the greater good. And, I want to leave a good testimony once departing, to our best ability.
And this is the thing that all of us get to one way or another, is the idea that what we've learned, what we understand, but we all seem to circle back to the way that you just said it now. What is the purpose of life at all? Is it just to consume and destroy and to leave, or is it to put back and to give and create more? And obviously the purpose of whether you believe in evolution or creation, at the end of the day, we're only here to replace ourselves. That's all it's for. But surely to goodness, we don't want to be the last people on Earth before the planet self-destructs because it was us that did it. It makes no sense. So there has to be another way of going about it. So you're understanding what's going on here. You clearly don't believe in depopulation. So how do we go about fixing this planet if we were in control of it?
Well, right now, we've got to prioritize at the moment what is the most catastrophic thing that is going on. Short of a nuclear cataclysm right now, it is the tonnage of material that's been dispersed above our heads. I mean, 20 million tons plus, right? Think about it. Nanonized particles, every moment, every single one of us are breathing it in, and it's doing damage to us. It's going right into our brain. It's bioavailable. And I mean, we're getting dumber by the minute, by the second. Our kids are breathing it in. The soil is absorbing it. It's altering the pH because all the microbes are dying, which is going to alter the forests, and it's killing the oceans. I mean, there was a report that had come out some years back. I will be paraphrasing this, but you know, they found alarming amounts of aluminium in the tissue of whales in the Antarctic region. So there's no way that's exempt from this. It's just ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's extremely toxic. It's synergistic. And we should add this fact, they can change the mixture overnight and it's game over. They can take care of all of us. How do we know that they won't do that? I mean, if you look at history, what these psychopaths have done, they can very easily just change the mixture. And, you know, this to me rings a very, very loud alarm bell. It's very urgent. People need to understand the urgency of it.
How would they change the mixture? What would they do that would make it different, that would improve it?
When you say improve, I mean, not so much improve it, but, you know, depending on their agenda at the time, I mean, who knows what it is. There's geoengineeringwatch.org is working on publishing some results that have shown that graphene oxide are one of the materials being distributed. I mean, here we are trying to avoid it, avoid the jabs because of this ingredient and other things too, you know, researching into the toxicity of it. And imagine not being able to avoid breathing it in.
Yeah. It is absolutely frightening. So for people listening in on this show, we're very well aware of graphene oxide, and of course it's challenged, and we're told that it's not inside the injections. What difference does it make if we're breathing it in anyway that's out there? Is this something that's being sprayed all around the planet or in certain areas at this moment?
Well, I think, you know, tests and studies that are soon to be published will reveal more on that. I think it's a little bit early to say anything quite yet. We'll wait for that one. But one more thing I want to add, I mean, there's synergistic toxicity too. We keep mixing all these toxic substances in the air. We don't know. I mean, we know that aluminium on its own is very toxic. Mix aluminium with graphene oxide. What kind of a result is that going to produce? Mix aluminium with the barium oxide that we know is in the air, or the strontium oxide, you know, there's polymer fibers in there. And then we got our background pollution. We've got, you know, hydrocarbons that are burning into the atmosphere from all sorts of plants, cars, trucks, you know, all these things that are mixing and coming down on us. We have airplanes that are also doing fuel dumps. Yeah. It's a whole cocktail of a toxic soup. And we don't know, I mean, we know it's doing damage, but the degree is just incalculable, absolutely incalculable.
It's just absolutely unbelievable to think that this is what's going on. The elites seem to know what's going on, and yet they must know how to protect themselves. And that's what really gets under our skin, right? That all of this is going on and they have this other plan. How are they doing that?
Well, again, that comes to speculation. I mean, there is a process of chelation, which is quite expensive and not really available to the general public, where they can cleanse their blood. But really, we've got to look at history. I mean, these people are psychopaths. That's what allows them to be in the position they are. They have no empathy. They've got no touch with humanity. They're absolutely psychopathic by nature. And you look at what they've done to the whole planet, including themselves in history. I mean, detonating thousands of bombs in so many islands and contaminating every single thing, including themselves, with radioactive material. You know, I mean, if the whole planet is covered by microplastics, even themselves will be contaminated. So, I mean, they're psychopaths, and I think it was psychiatrist Scott Peck, his name was. He had defined the definition of insanity by saying something along the lines of insane people have no comprehension to the consequences of their actions, even to themselves. And I'm paraphrasing that. And that's the definition of insanity, and that's what these people are. They're absolutely insane. And if it means they're going to destroy the whole planet to maintain their empire, to maintain their way of control and kingdom, they'll take the whole planet down with it. So we shouldn't try and see that from our perspective, try and understand it with our kind of mentality. These are different creatures, very different creatures.
So how do we, short of understanding what's going on, and once people wake up, then everything changes, because that's the way that we arrive at justice. It purely becomes that there's more of us than them. But how do we protect ourselves in the short term?
Well, the best way you can protect yourself is eat as little toxic food as possible. Drink clean water. Don't drink tap water. I mean, we know what's in there. Drink clean water. Give your body the best chance to be able to keep the metals moving, to keep the toxic material moving. Eat properly, sleep properly, exercise. I mean, try exercise indoors if you can, especially on heavy spray days. You know, keep your state of mind good. Try keep your body in a state of absolute health as much as possible, given the circumstances, so it can deal with the oncoming onslaught from the sky.
Okay, well, it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Because that's what we already know, and we are still, and that's why we're still walking and talking and going to work and doing everything else. So this stuff is a slow poison, but it's only the beginning of the understanding of it all. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'd like to have a chat to you more about what I brought up before the last break, which was about what's happening overseas in the United States specifically, because people are looking at it and wondering. Of course, with the loss of all the cattle in Kansas, and they're blaming a heat wave and whether that's true or not, but the idea that we seem to be marching ourselves towards this great famine where we're seeing food processing plants burning down all over the United States, and we're seeing animals being slaughtered everywhere every single day, that thousands and thousands have just been wiped out, and whether this is something else that we need to be concerned about and what should we do. So it's a whole lot more than just weather, but don't go anywhere. You're listening to TNT Radio.
According to the New York Times, Biden has granted the Earth climate stability due to higher gas prices.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
In the You Can't Make This Up department, a 2012 New York Times op-ed claimed that a carbon tax would result in higher gas prices that would result in, quote, climate stability that would prevent, quote, an end to life as we know it, unquote. The 2012 op-ed by Cornell University economist Robert Frank claimed that increasing gas prices by several dollars would achieve a solution to the climate crisis. Fast forward 10 years, and Joe Biden must have solved climate change, with gas prices more than doubling in the United States, going up several dollars a gallon. But wait, it's all so confusing. In 2012, the New York Times said cooling the climate would create climate stability. But the same newspaper in 1976, during the global cooling scare, warned that warming the Earth was the only way to achieve climate stability. Yes, don't question the science. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
I came to clean and noticed there was no food in the house.
She told me her sister just forgot to pay a few bills.
He was in for his monthly trim when I noticed the bruising.
Is there anything I can do?
Thousands of older Australians experience elder abuse every year. If you're concerned about someone you know, you don't need to have all the answers. Call 1-800-ELDER-HELP. For free, confidential information and support.
Suck it up.
It's not a big deal.
Snap out of it.
Just get over it.
We've all heard it. But if you're experiencing extreme stress, it's not just in your head. It can affect your entire body, because toxic stress can hurt us physically without us even knowing it. If you've lost a job, worry about your next meal, or have trouble making it through the day, if you're feeling the effects of stress, we can help. Text STRESS to 211-211 to find a solution.
The new communism is COVIDism. Mandating that the truth be told, this is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Jason Q, Citizen and Friends, and I'm here with Caesar. We're talking about weather, but it goes off in so many different directions. When you first of all, the difference between weather and climate science, one is local, one is global, and it makes a very, very big difference when you understand the differences, and that's what we're trying to talk about. Caesar, climate science, like the politicians tell us, does it make you mad when they talk about it like that?
It makes me mad because they are sticking with a narrative. I mean, the carbon issue is a very real issue. I mean, we can't expect to burn 100 million tons of, you know, hydrocarbons and expect no change. I mean, that's the energy balance of this planet is very delicate and complex, and we need to understand it. And just making such drastic changes on a global scale and to assume that it's not going to have an effect is quite naive. But they don't acknowledge climate engineering. They don't acknowledge a lot of things. They don't talk about the the methane venting that's ongoing at the moment. That could pretty much put the nail in the coffin for us. You know, that scenario that's going on up there. They don't talk about a lot of things that they should. And the solutions they offer are not solutions at all. It's more methods of lulling the masses into going back to consumerism, basically. Go back to shopping. You know, we've got this covered, you know, with the sustainability crap and the carbon credit scam, which is an absolute scam. I mean, the problem is there, but the solutions they offer, no. And again, I think they're disaster capitalizing here. They're turning a catastrophe into profit, profiteering. And, they're pointing fingers at the populations only. And, we're going to get punished for that, for an ongoing thing. But just because they're profiteering and there's a lot of corruption stemming from it, it doesn't mean that it's not going on. I mean, it's like saying, you've got Halliburton profiteering off, war regions with their cleaning contracts and construction contracts. Does that mean that the war is not going on? I mean, do we deny that there's a war going on because Halliburton is profiteering? The same sort of thing here. But it does make me mad because there's a serious lack of acknowledgement. There's major omissions. They downplay the severity. I mean, they talk about trying to keep the threshold at 1.5 degrees below pre-industrial levels. But given the data at hand, it well and truly seems that we're way above that, somewhere in the 3.5 degree range. And that's a part that really makes me mad. I mean, there's a lot of emissions.
So how would you go about changing it? So you take over for a period of time. What's the plan?
Okay. So here's the thing. From my observation, when we talk about awareness, awakeness, a lot of people know a lot of things going on, but they don't care. People are willing to adopt this new tyrannical system for as long they can have their McDonald's and have their TV and their footy and their beer, maintain their comfortable lifestyle of luxury. And what we need is a shock to these people, a sense of urgency, because that's the only time where people act. I mean, I'm sure many of us have witnessed car accidents. You know, there's been a prang, everybody jumps out. Most people jump out, initially good, bad, woman, male, whatever. They jump out, they help, because that instinct is there. And I think that's the only thing that's going to trigger people to get off their backsides. And for that urgency to be reinstated in people, things have to happen. And if climate engineering was to stop, these undesired weather conditions would be more often, would be more prolific, would be more aggressive. Now, it would not work in the favor of many of us in the short term, because of our way of life would be disrupted. This industrial system would not function. A lot of lives would be lost, unfortunately, and I do not condone that, absolutely not. But in the long term, the planet at least has the opportunity to try and compensate some of the damage and potentially sustain life in some parts of this planet. On this trajectory, we've got no chance. We'll be completely dead. This planet is on track to becoming what Venus has succumbed to. We're going towards Venus syndrome. But if we stop climate engineering and allow nature to respond with the ferocious weather conditions, it will disrupt the system. It will force people to rip their heads out of the sand to face the ugly reality. And that's what I believe in. The people, these people of the world, I'm not talking about third world nations. I mean, their primary thing is finding food to eat and running away from bombs. But especially in the first world nations, really the bulk of the people don't give a damn. They don't care because they're too comfortable, they're too luxury. And, we need nature to respond with a ferocity for people to have their lives interrupted. I am repeating myself, but, it really needs to be driven home, this point. So people will have no choice but to face the reality and to actually learn to, stand up, be a community and live in accordance with nature, because that's the only way out.
And so therefore that's the idea of talking about whether there's too many humans and whether we need to move off planet, which should be something that's spoken about. If these people want to talk about depopulation privately and let it seep out publicly, then why aren't they talking about the idea of moving off planet? And if we have to move somewhere else in the future, whether it's 50 years or 1,000 years, however long we can last, then so be it. But at least we would learn from our mistakes. And just to go back there, you made the point about Venus. In your opinion, was Venus caused because there was life on it that made that happen, or was it just the way that that planet has always been?
No. Venus had a runaway greenhouse effect where it basically hits a tipping point and you have what's called feedback loops that are triggered. And they all contribute to the proverbial monster waking up, and then the one next one wakes up another the next monster, and they all contribute to excessive warming. And the warming is like putting a blanket on the atmosphere where the heat that's incoming gets trapped in the atmosphere and can't get out, and eventually gets so warm that the oceans boil to the atmosphere. And Venus is something like 400, 450 degrees on the surface at the moment because of that. It's a runaway greenhouse effect. It can happen naturally, given certain circumstances occur. Again, it's complex. But in this case, in this moment of history, the human race is the cataclysm that's caused this. I mean, in lockstep for this to occur at this time, it's not a coincidence. When you look at it statistically, the human race is the, you know, and the industrial activity is the causal factor behind this. And if we do not change course in a very, very short, you know, near term within this decade, you know, we probably won't even see the end of the decade because the equation is actually exponential. It's not linear.
And this is the frightening part. So something's got to give, and it's going to give quickly. Yes. And it's very clear that things are happening very fast as we
speak. So let's consider some of the points. I mean, the UV, the ozone layer, is the collapse is imminent on this trajectory of destruction. The ozone layer, based on some of the testings of geoengineeringwatch.org, we've got till 2025-26 before the ozone layer is non-functional anymore. And, you know, there's many reasons contributing to the decimation of the ozone layer, but the primary causal factor is climate engineering again, through their ionosphere heaters pumping billions of watts of microwave energy into the atmosphere to ionize it. It's shredding the ozone layer. The constant spraying of the material of chemical reactions, the alteration of the light wavelength from the sun is actually inhibiting evaporation, which would otherwise deliver oxygen to regenerate ozone. And this has been ongoing for 75 years plus. So the ozone layer has been destroyed. It's not been regenerated, and thus it's running thin. And eventually, when it's no longer functional, you can imagine what will happen to the flora, the fauna, and the rest of us. Life will not be sustained. And that's looking at it from only one angle. Just one angle. That's how severe our situation is. And I have my instruments, basic instruments, and I, for a whole year, tested just about every month, just about every day, to see what the goal is with the UV index. Geoengineering Watch is producing some, you know, good outcomes, and I wanted to see if I could test myself and have something not definitive, but more indicative. And I found that what the authorities were telling us, that the incoming UV energy, 5% of it was supposed to be UVB, 95% UVA, and no UVC reaching the surface. Now, I found that every test I've had, the UVB content, the one that causes skin cancer, was 50% and more, not 5%. Every test. And that test, these test results, they align with the results of geoengineeringwatch.org. Again, their testing is more thorough, it's more professional, it's more definitive. Mine is only indicative. And I took a lot of photos on the highest UV days, and I've seen how the leaves and branches and trees were singed and burnt, and tree trunks were exposed. It was incredible. The north side where you get the most sun exposure. So, that's just one angle to look at it, the kind of catastrophes we face, how near-term it is, just the UV alone. We have seals in Antarctica that are going blind from the reflection. We have the UV factor contributing to the collapse of the Great Barrier Reef, which is pretty much 25% dead, and the rest of it will die at a very short rate soon. Not only because of the UVB, the acidification plays a part and the heat plays a part, but the UVP is one point that's not acknowledged by the mainstream. Another important factor about the UV, phytoplankton is half our oxygen source on this planet. They come to the surface to produce vitamin D. They get killed by the excess UV index. And now we have UVC reaching the Earth's surface, which pretty much undoes DNA. And I encourage people to look at geoengineeringwatch.org. the data is there. It's just incredible. So phytoplankton's disappeared, 50% of that. That's 25% of our oxygen source is gone on this planet. So, you know, when you put things into perspective, it is very dire, just from the UV perspective alone.
This is massive, massive news, and it will be very, very hard for people to understand what's going on. But as Caesar's been able to tell us in a lot of detail on the show today, which we have reached the end of it, unfortunately, is go check out geoengineeringwatch.org. That is Dane Wigington is the operator of that website. Caesar is technically one of his international students, for want of a better term, but somebody who's doing amazing work right here. We are down to our last 30 seconds, so I just want to say thank you, Caesar, for taking the time to be on the show. Please come back and tell us a little bit more about the developments in the different research that's going on in a subsequent show. I'd love to be able to catch up with you with some more, but in the meantime, keep up the good work. It's absolutely amazing, and have a great weekend here in Australia whilst the weather is at least very nice. And we've got Rick Munn coming up next. You are listening to TNT Radio.